You're on the Inside Track on World News from breakfornews.com. It's Monday the 7th of June 2004, and this is Fintan Dunn reporting with a special interview with Sibel Edmonds, the FBI translator the US government is trying to gag. You'll get the full Sibel Edmonds story on breakfornews.com. Sibel Edmonds has already given testimony to three separate inquiries instigated and conducted by the US Houses of Congress. But now Attorney General John Ashcroft has blocked relatives of the victims of 9/11 from using her information in their legal suit against the Saudi government and others. The information the US government is attempting to block indicates that the network of terrorists in the United States who allegedly carried out the 9/11 attacks were deeply enmeshed with criminal networks engaged in drug smuggling and money laundering, and that these subterranean links were hidden because the FBI had itself been penetrated by an extra-governmental intelligence organization that was blocking the information. I first asked Sibel Edmonds about the restrictions which the government's gag order now imposes on her. Before we turn to the explosive content of the information that you have, specifically the gag order under which you now have to operate means you're precluded from the specifics of the information which you have placed before these investigatory committees.
And now with this reclassification, they are saying actually I'm precluded to discuss anything, including I can't even say what languages I speak. I cannot say whether I translated Farsi, Turkish, and Azerbaijani for the Bureau. I cannot say whether or not I work for Washington Field Office, for FBI's Washington Field Office. I cannot say whether or not this individual, Melek Ken Dickerson, was connected to organization that was under investigation by the Bureau. I cannot say whether or not these investigations pre-9/11 actually were being retranslated afterwards. Yes, I'm precluded from saying all those.
Right. A lot of that information is in the public domain. Information which you have ranges across quite a number of areas. What people have drawn out of the information that you've already put in the public domain prior to the gag order is they've drawn out that there are questions about the effectiveness of the FBI translation, both before and after 9/11. There is possible penetration of the FBI by a foreign intelligence service, they've concluded from your information, and that specific intelligence, very specific intelligence, may not have come to light prior to 9/11, intelligence which may have prevented the attacks. That there were criminal networks, both trafficking drugs and laundering funds. People would be aware, even people who haven't followed these issues closely, as I have, having written about them 7 days after 9/11, but people would be aware that there is some question about whether the FBI had sufficient translation services in place to effectively translate intelligence and help prevent 9/11. It's your experience of the translation service and its bureaucratic operation and its modus operandi indicate that that's not necessarily true, that there was insufficient translation services available before 9/11.
Correct.
They were playing the bureaucratic game at your time in the agency. Let's not be too effective, because if we're very ineffective, they'll give us more money.
And not only that, it was not that they were not aware of certain operations pre-9/11 and after 9/11. It was also the fact that certain investigations were being quashed, let's say, per State Department's request, because it would have affected certain foreign relations, or it would have affected certain business relations with certain foreign organizations. So the reasons were not only incompetence. That was a small part of the whole picture.
Following 9/11, there was a move to strengthen the translation services. That was the move that brought you into the agency. And it was in the course of that that you discovered that there seems to have been deliberate misinterpretation of translated intelligence. Very specific plots, dates, aeroplanes being used as weapons, specific individuals, specific activities. It must have seemed like a nightmare to you at that time. as you began to uncover this information, and as also approaches were made to you by individuals who worked there, which, interpreted by others outside the situation, seemed clearly an attempt to recruit you to a foreign intelligence service.
And when we say foreign intelligence service, it's also good to note that it is not necessarily governmental foreign intelligence. Intelligence is also gathered by certain semi-legit organizations to be used for their activities, and they have their own intelligence gathering operations. A lot of these semi-legit organizations with underground activities with certain secrets of certain countries and also money laundering activities are not conducted by governmental agencies, and they're conducted by organizations' own intelligence activities.
Mm-hmm. There hasn't been that degree of finesse of understanding of who the intelligence service may have been in some reports I've seen, spotlighting the Israeli Mossad as the organization who was attempting to recruit you.
I have not to this date named individuals from, and I have not named countries.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, I'm mostly speaking about semi-legit organizations here in this country. And again, this whole game has changed. It really doesn't boil down to countries anymore, because when you have issues involving or activities involving a lot of money, you have nations, people from different nations involved, and as I said before, not necessarily governmental.
Extra-governmental.
Correct. Organized crime. It can be categorized under organized crime, but in a very large scale.
In as much as you can, Sibel, just explain to me what you mean by this extra-governmental network.
Again, I cannot discuss really specifics, but I have been saying that there are certain points when you have your drug-related activities combined with money laundering and information laundering converging with your terrorist activities. Therefore, to say this investigation is all only under counterintelligence or under criminal and it's not counterterrorism is absolutely, absolutely defeating and wrong, because there are points that they all converge. When you have network of people who obtain certain information and they take it out and they sell it to whoever who would be the highest bidder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then you have people who is engaged in bringing into the country narcotics from the East and their connections, then that is, it's only then that you really see the big picture and you see certain semi-legit organizations that may very well have legit front but with very, very criminal illegitimate activities will start coming at you from these investigations, and the picture becomes actually very clear, crystal clear.
Well, we know that there is and has been this overlap between criminal activities and U.S. Counterintelligence operations.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That goes back as far as Iran-Contra. We haven't lost all of the Iran-Contra players along the way. In fact, if anything, Iran-Contra players seem to have come more to the fore in recent years. We also have, of course, Richard Armitage as a deputy director in the State Department. Drug money is being rerouted a la Iran-Contra into counterintelligence operations and illegitimate operations worldwide. But let's move on, Sibel, to what you did when you found this information was you began to take it up the command chain. The moment you began to do that, it seemed as if you became the target of everybody's ire rather than somebody to be congratulated.
Correct. Initially, actually, it was friendly warnings and friendly approaches. I would take it to, let's say, the next level, to FBI, let's say, special agent in charge, and together with the translation and documents in my hand and saying, what is going on here? Is it being investigated? This needs to be investigated. And what are you doing about this certain issue? Something needs to be done with this. And initially, it was basically don't cause any trouble, don't make any waves, and then changing the topic and saying something like, oh, you know, you can have a very good career here. And actually, one of these individuals brought this application and his commendation letter saying, we would like you to apply for agent position. Because of your language abilities and with your education background, you would make a good agent. And it just, in a way, sounded like, well, I am not there to talk about me. I'm there to talk about this issue. And after I did not back off and keep going further and further up, it started turning to kind of not so friendly warning. First, they came and accused me of communicating with Senate members via my computer and via email. And at that time, I had not gone to the Senate. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to work within the system and try to have it address these issues within the Bureau. And I said, no, I had not. And they said, well, then please bring in your computer or we're going to come and confiscate your computer, which they did. They came to my house, and it was about a month and a half before I was terminated, as they term it. And they took out my computer. They took it into pieces, and they did not find anything because I had not at that point gone to the Senate. I was trying to work within the system. I took their polygraph, and I passed their polygraph without a glitch. And the retaliation did not stop. They stopped my work. There were documents that would start disappearing from my desk and from my computer. And I would go there, and they would say, there is nothing to do for you. And at that point, I decided I had to go to the next level, which was, again, within the FBI, to OPR, Office of Professional Responsibility. And that was my first behind-closed-doors briefing. Briefing adventure, mm-hmm. Going behind closed doors and giving these people everything on the record. They tape recorded it, they wrote it down, and under oath, and they said they would start investigating it, which they did. And afterwards, when again these issues were not being addressed, I finally decided to file these issues with the Inspector General's office. This is Department of Justice Inspector General's office. Again, I had to file these and I had to brief them behind closed doors with people who had top secret clearance. And I went to the Senate Judiciary Committee because that was the place for me to go. That was the official channel available for this exact purpose because they have the oversight. They have the oversight of the Department of Justice and the FBI. And based on these rules and the laws here in this country, this is the place you go. This is the place you're supposed to go. So I went and I briefed these Senate members. I also went to the Intelligence Committee. And about a week later, I was terminated without any notice. I was just thrown out of the building. I was told I did what I was not supposed to do, and you don't take these issues outside the Bureau. And they terminated me on March 22nd, 2002.
And during that period when it moved from friendly to unfriendly, besides these official entreaties to you to become an FBI agent, were there any other approaches made to you by individuals with whom you worked in relation to whose employment you should join?
Those incidents occurred in December 2001 as I started reporting these issues. Actually, that was the first thing I reported. And that had to do with another translator who was hired, and this translator, Dickerson, was given top security clearance without appropriate background check because they did not, or at least they claimed that the Bureau did not know that this individual, Dickerson, worked for this semi-legit organization that was the top target investigation for the Bureau. And the FBI had an ongoing investigation on this particular organization. And this individual, not only that she worked for this organization previously, she had ongoing relationship with the people involved in this organization and other connected organizations. And she was translating documents and audio related to these individuals.
That's astonishing because that it would be wonderful if you could just get a friend of yours who would be inside an organization like the FBI, who across whose desk conveniently intelligence information in a foreign language relating to you could be passed, and about whom you could be very secure that there would be no leakage.
Correct. correct. Fenton, as it was reported by Chicago Tribune in August 2002, and as it was confirmed by the Senate and also by certain government officials who were not named in Chicago Tribune article, because of these this activity by this particular translator, two of the top targets for FBI investigations, two individuals left the country. They left the United States.
Naturally, any organization which would find itself penetrated in that way would start looking up the command chain to figure out, is the penetration going higher?
I think However, if the penetration was exposed and was investigated, the activities and the identity of these semi-legit organizations would have been exposed also as part of, if they were to have investigations.
Mm-hmm.
And as I have said before, and as it had been asserted within the state secret privilege, that would have hurt certain foreign relations, and it would have hurt certain business relations with certain foreign organizations, and that was something that the State Department did not want to have. Therefore, they'd rather to have this thing not investigated and for the situation continue, rather than exposing these activities and therefore hurting certain relations.
And then the pressure was also put on, you were getting, I mean, a reference was made to you as to why would you put yourself at risk? I mean, you must have had, yourself and your family, do you have children, Sibel?
No, I have been married for 12 years, but no children. Actually, we have put this thing on hold until the situations are a little bit more manageable, because it's impossible to start a family at this stage. However, my family had to leave, and it basically turned our lives upside down.
But was there a point at which you blinked, just as an average person, figuring to yourself, how can I take on all of this? And if not, what kept you going?
What kept me going, I considered it from day one, my responsibility as a citizen, and not doing it for one particular organization, or one particular... This is the results and the consequences of what's going on and what went on and the issues I know affect all of us, not only me, but the country and the people. And I am part of this country. I am an American. Number two, I never considered it as a choice that I was warned even by family members and friends to just back off, let it go, because not doing so will endanger my life and my family's life. And first of all, it was too late. I was into this thing, and I had taken it upon myself to take it to the Senate and take it to... And the leak that happened about these issues first came actually from the Bureau, with this leak that they had to Associated Press. And my name was exposed. And along the way, I was maybe in a way naive or way too optimistic. Every time initially I went behind closed doors, being with a certain senator or a certain congressman or the center or a certain office, I thought, okay, I did my job. I gave it to this person. I gave it to this authority. That's it. Now they're going to do their jobs, and I can just go back and go on with my life. Then months would pass, and a gag order would be issued, or another cover-up would be imposed. Then I would go to the next person or to the next agency. And again, after I would do that, I would say, okay, fine. I did my job. It's over, so it's their job to do it. It's the authority's responsibility, and I have done my part. But look, over 2 years have passed, and 9/11 Commission, they were my last hope.
Mm-hmm.
It was the last channel not pursued. And I did the same thing. I went, and not only I went, I convinced others, agents or translators, to go and give their information. Anything that would shed light, they were going to say, oh, this is classified because it contains national security, top secret classified stuff. And they will have a bunch of whitewash, and they will say, you know, the solution is increase the budget for the FBI so they can increase the number of translators they have, increase the budget of this other agency, and actually rule on Patriot Act too, so it would make, you know, for them easier to snoop and do. That is going to happen. I can just see how it's going to happen. Yes, they're going to say there are some shortcomings, but these shortcomings can be fixed by increased budget, by more money and by more staff, and by having more restrictive, unpatriotic laws and regulations, such as Patriot Act too.
You sound like exactly the kind of American that America needs. There is an almost naive kind of person who believes in truth and who believes in justice and who staggers into these momentous events sometimes with that belief. And they're right, of course. They're right. And they come up against circumstances as you've come up against. And it is that belief in essential truth, I think, that drives them forward. And that comes across to me very strongly, Sibel, in hearing from you there how you responded to the situation and then how you responded more deeply as you saw the depth of the challenge. I mean, here we are, and we not alone have we lost the thousands who died on 9/11, but thousands more have died in foreign wars, both Americans and foreign nationals. And we still haven't got to the bottom of serious issues that you raised now coming up on 2 years ago.
Correct. But you were correct when you said now it is going to become a public issue and it will fall into the public court to for public to react. And this court hearing, we will be doing our best to argue and get them open the courtrooms, because one of the first things they do, they seal the courtroom so the press can't get in. So people who want to know and they want to observe firsthand can't get in. So as I said before, so that the information will fall into this black hole and it will just disappear there. And we're going to do our best to get them open the courtrooms. And I'm hoping that Monthly Rights will continue fighting this. They have the resources. And they have the reason. And I'm hoping still, I know it may still sound too optimistic, that there will be at least one, just one congressman, one senator, who will be willing to take a stand and come forward and put out this information, because they can't. Nobody's going to come and arrest them. I can't go and give this information under the laws, under this constitution we have here to these people. One of them, out of hundreds and hundreds of those people there who supposedly are representing this country, one of them to come forward and give this information to the American public. Just one. And I'm still looking for that one courageous person who truly represents this country. Because from what I see, these representatives, I don't believe they are out there to represent the people. First of all, your average American, just majority of people, they believe all they have to do is vote, pay their taxes, and abide by the laws, and they have fulfilled their obligations. And they don't have the time. They have to put the bread on the table. So they don't have the time to go and pursue these issues with their representatives. So who does? You're going to get these big corporations with their lobbyists and their activists that they are paid for to go and dine and wine these individuals and put their issues there. One representative sent this message to me, and this is recent, okay? This is, Sibel Edmonds will not make any friends in the Congress if she continues pressuring us and if she continues demanding action. That's not how she will make friends here. She will make only enemies. Well, since when these people afford the luxury of not being pressured? I mean, for a representative to send that message to me, that is just ridiculous. They think they are there for. To just play within the safe boundaries of safe issues, or to truly do what is necessary, what is being demanded of them to do. No, they're being too pressured. It's too stressful. The issue is too messy. It's going to end up being can of worms. I keep hearing these expressions. And that is so wrong. That is not right. Then they should just vacate their seat. They don't want to be pressured. Then they should not run for offices.
And you have given specific investigation files, specific dates, specific target information, and general information about the time frame of the attacks, the methods to be used, about people being in place and who was ordering these sort of terror attacks. you seem to have had your finger on such vital information, and that information has to be put before the American people. This seems to me, as an investigator who's looked, as I say, from 7 days after 9/11, when I wrote the first questioning article, the information you have there seems to be the mother lode of information. And yet here you are struggling to get it out, while the 9/11 Commission engages in grandstanding actions such as congratulating Mayor Giuliani on his behavior during the period, rather than investigating this kind of material.
But isn't this ironic? They keep citing national security to gag this issue. On the other hand, what they're doing is exactly that, endangering our national security.
There are certainly some interesting things arising out of the timing of the government's retrospective gag order. It was interesting, was it not, that the move came on foot of a move by the Motley Rice lawsuit.
The state secret privilege is a very rare assertion, and it is a very extreme assertion. Here I worked for the Bureau for 6 months as a translator with top security clearance. And Attorney General of this country is coming out and personally asserting, declaring this state secret privilege. What are they hiding?
It seems that you can happily, Sibel, speak behind closed doors to investigatory committees of the U.S. Houses of Congress. There's no concern about that. But there seems to be an immediate response then when there's a possibility of your information getting in place in a civil action.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because that would take it out of the domain of the closed-door arena behind which you've been operating.
And after I go and I give this information, they throw in their weights and they come and they stop the Congress or the 9/11 Commission or the Inspector General's office putting and issuing gag orders or citing classification and security classifications. And they are so self-assured that once I give this information to these people behind closed doors that they can prevent it from getting out and they can prevent any further actions, but it doesn't bother them. I can go as many times as I want to any Congress members, to 9/11 Commission, and give this information, give them all specific evidence, specific documents, everything to them, and they are so assured that nothing will come out of it that they are not bothered by it. However, if it's the public arena, if it's the court, if it's a civil action by family members, they don't have that control. That's why they are panicking. And that's why they are going to this extent, to this extreme, gagging the United States Congress so that those letters won't be used in court to prove our points or to prove family members' attorneys' points that this information, parts of it at least, has been public. And we have a right to use it.
Well, hopefully your attorney, Mark Zaid, will be able to make convincing arguments to the court.
Well, Fintan, they are using 9-10 top attorneys, this is being the government, and they don't have to be bothered by any budget because they're using taxpayers' money. And they also, they have enough influence to ensure that they have a Bush-appointed Republican judge in place, because my case actually went from a judge to another judge until it landed in front of this particular judge's desk. So I don't think we are going to fight this case on equal footing, because here we are going there with a judge that so far has shown where he stands, and we are there with these government attorneys, Attorney General Ashcroft's right arm, and with unlimited resources of taxpayers' money, and trying to battle and fight a fight that is not really fightable.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to sound pessimistic. Believe me, we will be fighting this, and we will be appealing this, and I'm not going away, and I'm going to push and push and push as long as I'm alive.
Are you more hopeful following the resignation of Tenet?
Oh, well, that depends how much Tenet will be willing to talk now that he has resigned. Is he going to wait until his book is out? And I wonder when his book will be coming out. But I certainly hope that it will be soon. And I certainly hope that he will talk. You know, coming out and resigning is not enough. You have to really spell, you know, help the scene. And the same thing is true with whistleblowing. And this is what I have been trying to tell people. To just come out and blow the whistle and then go away, you really won't accomplish anything. because, yes, it will make the headline for 1 day or 2 days or 3 days, and then the issue will be forgotten. You have to stand there and fight it.
Well, then, really, tactically, from your point of view, from the point of view of truth, from the point of view of the American people, this charade of forcing you through court actions in relation to your key evidence, it's like focusing on the curtain rather than the show. We need to pull back that curtain. We need to get you in front of Congress. We need to get that closed-door testimony out in the open, as I say, driven by the court of public opinion, into the House of Congress, back to the lawmakers where it belongs, not in front of a judge. Would you agree that that's the forum you need?
Well, Fenton, you're going to be very busy. And I am amazed to see just in the past 2 months how much support I have received from people and, you know, like people like yourself who is paying attention, and not only that, who's also spreading it and trying to inform others. And that is extremely important, to raise the awareness, and that's what you're doing, and that's what many people that have come out and they have been supporting me have been doing it, and it counts. Every single one of these counts, and it becomes a movement, and I'm seeing that it is becoming a movement, and now I do have a reasonable reason to be optimistic.
Yeah, and I congratulate you on holding your nerve. And I'm also aware of you, Sibel, as a person who'd like to get on with the business of having her own family, and who is an individual besides being a political football, which I've no doubt you are about to become. And I do thank you for your efforts on behalf of the truth. And I know many others who have been fighting this battle outside of the mainstream media for the last few years would also thank you. Thank you very much, Sibel Evans. And I look forward to speaking to you again. And you never know, maybe next time we speak, you'll actually be able to talk about some of the stuff that the US government doesn't want you to talk about today.
Oh, absolutely. Let's keep that faith.
Okay.
Thank you, Vincent, and anytime.
You've been listening to a BreakForNews.com exclusive interview with Sibel Edmonds, the FBI translator, who's currently the target of a gag order by the US government. You'll get the latest details on Sibel Edmonds' story on BreakForNews.com. If it's some time after this interview, just go to the archive section of the site. For BreakForNews.com, this has been Fintan Don reporting.